Hello, I'm LaFern Cusack, senior producer here at Promax EDA. And this is the Daily Brief Podcast. Our linear TV content and viewers continue to move to new platforms as VOD, OTT, TVE, VOD, DVR. Some we control, others we don't. But our on-air marketing does a good job of getting viewers to sample them all. What happens when they do? What is the viewer experience? And most importantly, what are we doing to retain and grow our viewership on the platforms we control? In his 2017 New Best Practices session, which took place at the conference this year, Lee Hunt delves into DVR, TVE, and VOD behavior and its effect on linear TV brands. Here's what Lee had to say.
Hi, thanks for sticking around. Good afternoon. This is the last session of the day. So the only thing that's standing between you guys and the bar downstairs is this presentation. So we'll get right into it. This last year has been a real year of reflection for me. My twins, Austin and Asia, both graduated from college about 2 weeks ago, and both with degrees in television and film. So I've been thinking a lot about their future and also our future, because I still got college bills to pay off. Now, what's interesting, for those of you who don't know my kids personally, you might recognize them here. When they were 3 years old, they were the models for the PBS Kids logo. Now they're 22 years old, and it's really interesting to think about how much the industry has changed in that short amount of time. Now, the PBS Kids brand is still going strong, but the rest of the industry is seemingly in chaos. And actually, maybe that's a good thing, because I actually see a parallel between the beginning of my career and my kids' career. I remember when I started out in this business, it was the beginning of the cable TV revolution. And no one really understood what this new technology, multi-channel content, delivered by satellite and by coax, what it would really bring, except maybe some visionaries like Ted Turner and John Hendricks. But for the rest of us who started out in this cable world, we found that there were really no rules. So we had to make them up as we were going along. And along the way, we pretty much changed the business of television. In those early days, cable was so far outside the mainstream that I could not have attended this conference or joined this organization. Back then, it was called the Broadcast Promotion Association. Now, luckily, we've learned our lessons, and we embrace anybody, marketers, designers, creatives, from any aspect of the electronic media. But I do think that we're at a similar inflection point. The rules are changing, and we still don't quite know what they are yet. Just in the last year, we've seen an explosion of specialized SVOD, subscription video on demand services. Now, I was talking to a friend and client of mine from the old days of cable, and he's launching a specialized SVOD service, and he remarked that it's very much like the old Wild West days of cable, when we thought really anything could be a cable channel. Anybody here remember the Puppy Channel? This was a real 24-hour a day, 7-a-week channel, and all it did was show really cute videos of puppies. And according to their press materials, it actually rated higher than CNBC. So if we fast forward now 20 years, the Puppy Channel has grown up, and we now have Dog TV. This is an SVOD service from Comcast. And what it offers, and I'm not making this up, is scientifically designed programs to keep your dog company while you're away. Now, it's only $4.99 a month, and of course, it comes with lots of great swag as well. So it seems to me, in 20 years, we've sort of come full circle in this industry. And I believe that the next generation, this generation, of promo and marketing and design creatives are really going to rewrite the rules. Because I can tell you, the old ones are falling apart really fast. Last month, I saw an article in Fortune magazine. This is the GIF from the electronic version. And it was all about Hulu's move to live TV. Now, here are some quotes that really stood out to me. The first one was, first of all, you got to remember, Hulu is owned by ABC, Fox, NBC, and Time Warner. So these quotes really stand out. Want to watch Modern Family in real time? on the new Hulu, you'll no longer have to flip to ABC or even know that it airs on ABC. Which network is the voice on? Hulu viewers don't need to care. According to Ben Smith, navigation should not be about networks. Even Les Moonves, the stalwart of broadcasting, sees the change. I truly believe that people know that 60 Minutes and Stephen Colbert and NCIS are on CBS, but gun to their head, that's not the important point. The brands are 60 Minutes, Stephen Colbert, and NCIS. Well, let's see if Les is right. Gabriella Mirabelli of Anatomy Media recently released a study, in fact, just this week, about young millennial media consumption. Her team used aided recall brand recognition tests to assess whether young millennials could connect program brands with their related network brands. So what respondents were asked to do, they were shown images of key art from different shows, then asked to select the correct corresponding network brand from a list of only seven choices. And the results are pretty telling. Less than one-third of respondents could correctly identify the source of ABC, CBS, and NBC shows. Fox fared a little bit better at 40%. Amazon came in at 20%. Hulu, again owned by ABC, NBC, Fox, and Time Warner, came in at 15%. Netflix, however, had a 65% correlation. So why is that? Well, according to the study, what Netflix did and their higher score can be attributed to their commitment to improving the user experience and also their ability to consistently communicate brand value across digital consumer touchpoints, whether it be social media, search engine optimization, digital advertising. According to Anatomy's rankings, Netflix outscored its competitors in all these different categories. Now, you could argue that, okay, Netflix was really first to market with original OTT programming, so they'd be top of mind. But if you actually look at the scores from Anatomy, they have better user interface, faster page uploads, better technology, more consistent branding on social media, and just an overall smarter social strategy. Anatomy concluded, and I agree with this, that the user experience determines the success of media brands in a non-linear, multi-platform world, and that putting the user experience at the center of a marketing strategy maximizes a media brand's ability to communicate its value. Now, going back to that article, James Murdoch, CEO of 21st Century Fox, concludes, "This puts the burden on us. How do we make sure these brands continue to mean something to people?" To me, it's all about changing the rules. So let me tell you where I think this is going to go on the linear side and who I believe is going to lead the way, whether they realize it or not. So let's actually start with the 50 highest rated linear networks of 2016. So what you see here is a really healthy mix of different genres, different psychographics, different demographics. But look what happens when you begin to take a step up the corporate ladder. If we begin to organize all these different networks by their parent media companies, well, suddenly what you begin to see is that 14 media companies control all 50 networks. Now, if we remove some of the independents like INSP, Sony's Game Show Network, and media companies that only have two networks in the top 50, and for now, let's just focus on English language channels, so I'm going to pull Univision out. And what we find is that 82% of the top 50 networks are controlled by just eight media companies. Now, some people might think that's scary, but I think it's the ultimate skinny bundle. What if you had eight brands that contained most of the content of the top 50 ad-supported networks? Now, of course, that's not possible in a linear world, but in an OTT world, it is. And if you think about it, that's kind of what Hulu tries to do, well, sort of, except they pit competing media companies against one another, each trying to outmaneuver the other. But what if there were vertical bundles by media companies, essentially the old walled garden idea? And actually, CBS is already headed in that direction. We're going to take a look at their model in just a minute. But in the meantime, I think that we're already beginning to see a progression to this model with other media companies. Now, it wasn't that long ago that most of these networks, or at least many of them, were independent. And even when they were part of a larger media company, they tended to operate as standalone networks, focusing on individual P&Ls. Each channel essentially was a silo. Well, we've seen that change pretty dramatically just in the last couple of years. Portfolio strategies are becoming as important, if not more important, than individual channel strategies. Now, you guys might remember a couple of years ago, we talked about NBCU's Symphony, which is a Comcast initiative to, quote, find creative, technological, and strategic opportunities between Comcast and NBCU's portfolio, which is the broadcast and cable networks, Universal Studios, the theme parks, television production operations, and the stations group. Essentially, that's what you experienced last night at the party. And Symphony is still going strong. Here's an example of an integration they ran last summer. This is a spot for Ghostbusters from Universal Pictures that included talent from NBC, USA, Bravo, and E! But NBCU is not alone. I have an analytics company called CMO Intelligence, and we track the on-air marketing of 18 different general entertainment networks. And we found that actually Fox Networks does the best job of supporting their portfolio on air. We noted that an average of 13% of Fox's primetime promo inventory went to cross-promoting other channels and other shows in the portfolio. Over at FX, a full 21% average amount of promo time goes to cross-channel. Now, you could break that out to say that more than one in five FX promos is used to support other Fox properties. But it's not just about gross weight, but also creative depth. Over at NBCU, we often see what we at CMO Intelligence, we don't call it cross-channel promos, but actually cross-channel integrations, literally weaving the promotion of one show and the talent of that show into the cross-promotion of a sister network's program. Now, here's another example, an NBC spot that was specifically run in sci-fi's zombie apocalypse show, Z Nation. We're also beginning to see a lot more cross-portfolio programming. You've got NBC's This Is Us airing on USA, USA's Colony running on Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi's Incorporated scheduled on USA, History's American Pickers on A&E, A&E's Marriage at First Sight on Lifetime and FYI, Fox's 24 Legacy and APB on FX, or an entire weekend of Science Channel on Discovery. Now, I get that as a programming strategy, and I think it's very smart, but as a brand strategy, it's a real problem. Part of the promise of our networks is content exclusivity. If my original programming appears on other linear channels, as well as a slew of other digital platforms, what makes my network brand unique? How do I remain relevant? Well, I actually think this guy's got it figured out, John Landgraf from FX Networks. Unlike most portfolios that host an assortment of varied, disconnected channels, FX Networks is built holistically. Now, granted, it's part of a larger portfolio, Fox Networks, and we're going to get into that, but just look at that. All the logos come from the same design scheme. It looks like a family of networks. The positioning and the tagline for all four networks is the same. Fearless, as in fearless storytelling, the one thing that connects them all. What other network can you think about that actually shares its tagline? And you might remember when they rolled out this strategy a couple of years ago, almost all their in pages included every channel in the portfolio. Now, one thing you'll notice is that I'm calling their TVE service, FX Now, a channel, because FX Networks is the only ad-supported portfolio that I've seen that treats its TV Everywhere product as equal to its linear channels. For most networks, TVE tends to be an afterthought. Not only does FX Networks treat FX Now on par with their networks, they're the only group that consistently season after season, promotes horizontally, not just vertically, across all the networks, whether it's at the highest level of the brand or whether it's for a particular genre like comedy programming. So while these three channels are unique places on the linear dial, and the fourth is a platform, they all live under what I will call a super channel brand, FX Networks. And actually, not to get too confusing, FX Networks is really just FX Now, at least in the digital world. In the OTT space, FX Now is content from FX, FXX, and FXM. And actually, if you scroll through and you look closely, you also find relevant programming from Fox and also from Nat Geo. And if you think about it, that really is genius. But what's also, and I think even more interesting, is that within that Fox portfolio, you find more than one strategy. Take a look at Nat Geo's TVE service, Nat Geo TV. It's a portfolio, but it's bifurcated, where FX Now mixes and matches content from different channels. With Nat Geo TV, you click on the app and you have a choice of experiencing National Geographic or Nat Geo Wild. Now, what's also interesting in this is that they remove the word channel from their linear service, much like History did and Hallmark Movies and Mystery, but they actually took that and added TV to the name of their digital portfolio. So it's sort of a question, is that a new trend? Is it a new appellation for content on digital platforms? Well, if you think about it, in the last year we've seen YouTube TV, Awesomeness TV, but then there's also Amazon Channel. So what do millennials call the platforms that they watch their stuff on? That's another lingering question. But I digress here. Let's jump from FX and Nat Geo up to Fox Broadcasting. A couple of weeks ago, Fox announced that Fox Now, the broadcast TVE service, will contain content from Fox, FX Networks, and Nat Geo, essentially portfolios within portfolios. And I think that's the future, these portfolio brands. But it does seem in this example that it requires a big general entertainment umbrella to be a part of the brand. And that's why I'm really interested in what's going on over at Viacom right now. Now, if you think about it, it's been really interesting to see what's happened when Bob Bakish, the new CEO, came in. I think he's really on to something. You might remember that Viacom Networks used to be called MTV Networks after the flagship channel. The portfolio was a mix of homegrown channels and acquired networks. There really was no grand plan to the collection, though at one point it was called a cradle-to-grave strategy. But in reality, it was built opportunistically over time. And as we all know, they've had a rough patch of it the last few years. So when Bob came in, he looked across that portfolio, and he realized that resources were being spread too thin and determined the primary focus should be on these six channels. Now, here's where it gets interesting to me. If you look at those six, BET is a demo-based channel. Comedy Central is a genre channel. MTV, Nick Jr., and Nickelodeon are demos, and actually, until recently, so was Spike, a channel for men, particularly young men, and then a couple of years ago, they shifted to a general entertainment positioning. Now, Spike's done well, but it's not a well-known general entertainment channel, certainly not the flagship channel of the portfolio. That's still MTV, but MTV could never become a general entertainment channel. So Viacom decided that they were going to focus on Spike. But they needed a flagship name. Now, they could have called it, I guess, the Viacom Network, but Viacom is not a consumer-facing name. They actually learned that the hard way when they opened up the Viacom Entertainment stores and then quickly closed it. Kind of went the way of the puppy channel. So, what to do? Well, Bob comes from the international side of Viacom, where they've had success with the Paramount Channel, a brand name after the 105-year-old studio. Now, that's a brand with a long, deep history. And like most movie studios, it pretty much stands for general entertainment, and it's never been fully exploited here in the U.S. Now, of course, there are some downsides as well. We know studio brand recognition tends to skew a little bit older, and unlike Disney or Universal, there's no auxiliary business like a theme park or music labels, but it's certainly better than starting from scratch. And it's a logical choice, and potentially, Paramount could be the umbrella that unites the portfolio. But actually, does an umbrella master brand always work? Well, a couple of years ago, Discovery Communications launched an aggregated app, 9 different Discovery networks available all in one place. This made a lot of sense to me when I saw this. Combining all those networks into a single app allowed users to save space on their tablets and mobile devices. But more importantly, what it did is it gave Discovery new ways to share content with audiences who might not otherwise be aware of it. Having one app would create greater exposure for some of Discovery's smaller networks. But Discovery found there wasn't a lot of cross-pollination between these two networks. And if you think about it, that kind of makes sense. Viewers of Discovery's hot rod show, Street Outlaws, is probably not the same group that's going to be sampling TLC's Say Yes to the Dress. When you have a portfolio of very diverse, contrasting genres, shows, and demographics, there may not be as much interplay as you would hope. So, DCI has gone back to individual network apps to continue to build loyal individual network audiences. But let's talk about a network brand that's found success in the digital world as a master brand, but without a portfolio, and that would be CBS All Access. In 2014, CBS decided to enter the streaming game, but instead of following ABC, NBC, and Fox to Hulu, CBS launched CBS All Access. More recently, they've quietly added movies from the Paramount library, and not so quietly added NFL content. Essentially, CBS All Access has taken the attributes of a broadcast network and blended them with the opportunities of internet-delivered content. So essentially what they've got is live streaming of CBS local affiliates, current season episodes available the next day, all episodes of current seasons and previous seasons, the ad-free classic show library, exclusive content like the spinoff to The Good Wife, The Good Fight, Big Brother, the new Star Trek reboot, and it's also an interesting aside that they use the broadcast network as a barker channel to get people to subscribe. You can see the premiere episode on CBS, but you have to subscribe to All Access to watch the entire season. They've also got added value content that you typically find on a marketing website and linear interstitials. They're shopping, it's platform agnostic, and all this is available with a full commercial, limited commercial, or commercial-free load. So think about that. Unlike Netflix, Hulu, or Amazon, CBS controls every facet of the entertainment experience. What surrounds the content on the page physically? What precedes and follows that content? What other choices the viewer encounters when they're searching for that content? When viewers pause, when they rewind, when they fast forward, when they view, when they review, when they dump out of a show early, the number of pages it actually takes to get to choose the content, the time of day that people watch, the device they use, their geolocation. What all of this does is it gives CBS the ability to suggest and to direct viewers to more CBS content and link that to added value content to create a deeper, engaging experience. Overall, CBS All Access has the ability to continually influence, measure, and monetize viewer behavior. And that's something the rest of us really struggle to do. All the things that we complain about Netflix, their ability to use big data to learn everything about how their subscribers make viewing decisions and then capitalize on that knowledge, CBS theoretically can now do. They take all the advantages of an OTT service like Netflix, but retain their network brand. Now, that helps CBS viewers, but what about the experience in and of itself? We keep talking about moving all linear brands over to these digital platforms, but we really haven't talked about the unique advantages of that medium. And it's important to note that networks that are involved in this, that have an advantage in the IP world that's going to continue to develop over time. essentially over-the-air television is what I like to think of as two-dimensional. It flows past you kind of like a river. But IP-based delivery allows you to stop that flow and really dive in deep, to add multiple dimensions to the experience, and then be able to engage in what I'll call the Z-axis. Let me give you a more real-world example. My wife was binge-watching The Good Wife on our Amazon Fire TV. Now, she discovered that when she hit pause, a lower third bar appeared and gave her information on the actors who appeared in that scene, just in that one scene, and that she could get even more information by clicking down there on View All X-Ray, or she could just continue on with the show. Now, she loved all that. And several episodes later, there was a scene with a piece of music that she really liked. And she said to me, Lee, get out your iPhone and Shazam this. I want this music. And I said, no, just hit pause. So she did. And by clicking X-Ray, she was able to learn everything that was going on in that scene, including where the music came from. In this case, Better by Regina Spektor. Well, what else could she do? Well, she could jump from scene to scene. She could learn more about the cast, or from a different perspective, the characters. There was even trivia. Now, this was Amazon, so you'd expect that she could actually buy the music, but we're not quite there yet, or actually, are we? Well, it's interesting. I was talking to the tech guys at Broadway Video, and they do a lot of the metadata insertion that allows networks to exploit this information. And they told me this is really just the tip of the iceberg. They said that certainly with a service like Amazon, I could eventually point to anything in the screen and be able to buy it. Now, many of us remember the hollow promise of ordering pizza from your cable set-top box, but the time for transactional television is really just about here. I particularly love this example that the BV guys showed me from The Walking Dead, is that you can even buy the walker-killing weapons. I love that. Now, full disclosure, it's actually just a cosplay prop. Now, Michael Smith, who is the general manager of Scripps Digital Video Networks, describes what I'll call the concert experience. You go to a concert to see your favorite band. You share that with like-minded fans. You buy the t-shirt, you buy the drinks, you buy the snacks, maybe even you buy a DVD. And according to Michael, this analog carries over to a lot of digital media companies. They're pivoting away to diversify from advertising with events, memberships, podcasts, e-commerce. You have a main draw, like a concert headliner, and then you try to do a bunch of other business around it. Again, that's all new rules. So in theory, CBS All Access can do that too, but then so can Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, or any other OTT service. But again, CBS has an advantage those aggregators don't. The power of a network brand. And that's something we've been fighting so hard to hang on to. Let's go back full circle and really think about the value of a linear network brand. What we know is that linear networks effectively organize content for both viewers and advertisers. From a business perspective, they balance hits and misses. For every hit series, we know there's going to be a dozen or more failed ones. Networks achieve success by balancing a mix of successful and less successful programs. We use those hits to drive viewers to new, undiscovered, or underperforming series. And we move viewers contiguously from show to show to show using affinity. That creates day parts and increases time spent viewing. But most importantly, and I think it's something we often take for granted, is that a linear network is a controlled, contextually relevant environment. Let me explain what I mean by that. In a linear network, we control the programming, the packaging, the promotion, the advertising, the added value content. We decide what goes where, in what order, for how long, and for how often. Linear networks create a holistic entertainment experience. And I think that's really key. What we need to do is shift away from just focusing on selling single shows to selling curated experiences. But too often what I see are spots that are just a laundry list of clips and titles organized around a calendar. The best multiple experiences find a theme. So you've got dramatically different, mega week, Thank God it's Thursday. Those are all brand promise that connect the program. There's actually a reason for the curation, and that's what a network should all be about. But sometimes it's just about wrapping up the content in your own unique brand voice. So, of course, sometimes we do need to sell single shows. So what can we do that OTT services can't? Well, we're linear and they're not. So let's use that to an advantage. Last year, I showed you how FX built a campaign arc of 14 unique pieces of creative over 112 days, 16 weeks, for The People versus O.J. Simpson. It became cable's most watched new series of 2016 and FX's top-rated first-year series ever. That's using a linear arc, building a campaign across time. So that was a new series, but what about a returning series? Now, within our CMO intelligence audit of 13 general entertainment cable networks for 2016, what we found is that FX, once again, had the lead for the number of creative executions, this time for the returning of the series baskets. We found 15 unique pieces of creative. TNT, on the other hand, led for campaign duration for season two of Animal Kingdom, with a campaign that stretched more than 200 days that, in fact, actually ends tonight. So I decided to go in a slightly different direction. I want to close with it because I think it's really special. So let's first review what we've discussed. It's time to rewrite all the rules. First of all, we need to figure out how to make our linear network brands not just survive, but actually flourish in an increasingly title-driven world. So first, use the messaging and marketing platforms that we know are going to drive correlations between shows and networks. Second, if you're part of a channel portfolio, take advantage of it. Start thinking outside your channel and learn how you and your sister networks can support one another. Don't assume that your TVE on-demand or SVOD services have to stick to the linear rules. Does a master brand strategy work for you, or are decentralized brands smarter? Either way, there's going to be political, contractual, legal, maybe even regulatory challenges. But to succeed, we have to realize we've got to make up a lot of new rules. Next, you know, learn from the successes and the failures of your competitors. If you can't be a trailblazer, at least follow the paths of those who are. Understand exactly what you can and can't do outside of linear media. Don't assume the old models are going to work. Realize that you're going to have to experiment with new ones. And finally, remember that linear networks have aggregation abilities that OTT services don't. So exploit those different advantages. You're not a collection of shows. You're a curation of shared experiences. You control your air. Use it to build campaign story arcs. So that's it. As always, this presentation is available on website with embedded videos. And if you want to know more about Gabriella's study, she's sitting right down there, and I know she'd love to talk to you. Thanks for coming, and I'll see you guys down at the bar.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaCaire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A, follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack, follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.